You're listening to the Groundbreaking Podcast from the Global Ag Tech Initiative. The Global Ag Tech Initiative is the catalyst for connecting, engaging, and fostering dialogue in global food production, with technology as the foundation for driving innovation and solutions. The Groundbreaking Podcast brings forth voices across the industry to discuss trends, best practices, and innovative ideas driving agriculture forward in a rapidly changing world. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for joining today's edition of Groundbreaking Podcast. I'm Heather Tunstall, the co-chair with Global Ag Tech Initiative. And today I'm here with Vani Estes, Vice President of Innovation with IFPA. Vani, thanks for joining.
Thanks for having me, Heather. I'm really excited to be on this side of the microphone. It's really fun.
That's right. You're so used to being on the other side. We're going to talk a little bit about your podcast that just reached its 100th episode. Congrats. Yeah.
Thank you.
So first, I want to talk a little bit about IFPA. For those who are not as familiar with it, can you give us an overview?
Sure. So we're the International Fresh Produce Association. We're a member-focused organization whose goal is to increase consumption of fresh produce. And we support the entire supply chain, so all the way from crop inputs like breeding and crop protection products through all of the growers, through packer shippers and the supply chain to retail. So we don't work with consumers directly, but we work in the whole supply chain. And we're global. We're all over the world, growing more and more all over the world. And so we get involved in trade issues. We do a lot with advocacy. We're very involved in the U.S. in Washington, doing a lot of work with the WIC programs and making food accessible to people. We just have tons of members in all over the world.
Fresh produce is one thing that we all need, and exactly. You're doing great work there. So appreciate that and all that you do. So obviously there's a lot of tie-in with the produce industry and technology. And as the Global Ag Tech Initiative, we want to focus on how tech can help enable some of these efforts. Tell us a little bit first about how tech ties into the IFPA work that you do, and then we can lead into a Fresh Takes on Tech podcast.
Okay. Well, in the work that I personally do, it's everything that I do. But as an organization, my role didn't exist until I got this job 5 years ago, when the board and the leadership at the time, PMA, Produce Marketing Association, said, you know, technology is the future. We need new solutions to solve all of our big problems, and it's going to come from tech. And so they created this role for me to step into, which has just been fabulous. And so most of what I do is trying to bring technology into produce, because so many, even just within agriculture, most tech companies get started in the broad acre crops. And because it's all the crops are more similar, the ground is flatter, it's kind of all in one place, corn is bigger than blueberries. And so a lot of technology goes in the broad acre crops. And so I've really been working at trying to bring technology from broad acre crops, but also from everywhere, any technology that anybody is using. We'd like to have people see that there's a place for it to solve some of our biggest issues in produce.
Yeah, and speaking of some of those major issues that we're talking about, one of them is the effect of climate change and what's happening right now with extreme weather as a result. So this season of Fresh Takes on Tech podcast is focusing on climate smart technology. Is that correct?
Sure. So the podcast got started, as many podcasts did, during COVID. And because I was just going crazy not being able to talk to people. And I was like, well, we'll do a podcast. So as you mentioned, we're now on our 100th episode. So we've kept at it. We put out the podcast weekly, with some breaks in between, and we also do record a whole bunch of them at our global show, which is really fun to be, podcasting live with members. So the main goal of the podcast is just to shine a light on all different kinds of technologies that are used across all of the produce industry. So all those different parts in the supply chain. I tend to focus a little more on on-farm technologies, because that's my background and what I know, but I do look at the whole supply chain. So this particular season is supported by our USDA Climate Smart Commodities Grant. So money from that grant goes into supporting the podcast. And this particular season, season is 6 episodes. I'm talking to a number of different people. About half of them are involved in the grant. And so we talk about, you know, how we're administering the grant. And I try not to get too much into, I was coaching my boss actually about talking about the grant. And I'm like, I know you're in the details of it and the mechanics because it's really hard, but nobody wants to hear about that. You know? So let's talk about what we're trying to do here. Cause it's, you know, grants are a lot of work as anyone knows, but we're looking at, we're talking right now with 100 different growers and giving them some technology to just measure what's going on in the soil. And they'll take measurements. And at the end of the program, they'll, and they've got a number of different climate smart practices and companies that we're suggesting they work with. And then we'll actually be able to measure like what the improvements were. So it's a really exciting project. And so I've got the podcast, the episode one is Max Stiputsky, my boss, and Drew, who is also working with Max to just develop some of the technology for the program. And then we'll talk to people who are in the program. Then they'll talk. I talk to a number of other people who are just using climate smart practices and what that's doing for them. So it's a super fun season. I hope everyone listens to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And who better to lead it than one of our women in ag tech ambassadors, right? So yeah. Bonnie has been graciously helping along with the Women in Ag Tech initiative with her extensive background in that area. So Bonnie, tell us a little bit more about some of the places that IFPA goes out. So you say you're international, right? You attend a lot of conferences. You yourself speak at many of these conferences. What's coming up in the coming months?
So the next conference that I'm going to as an internal conference is our retail conference. It moves around this year. It's in Phoenix, and it's we have councils within IFPA, and the retail council has this conference. They have a golf tournament, and like everybody wants to get in front of the retailers. They're like the prize of who everyone wants to talk to. But I also chair the CEA council. And so we are strategically having a cocktail hour with the retail council. And then we're also going to have a council meeting there. So that's great for our CEA council too, to just get them to be able to be in front of the retail council. And then I'm also speaking on a panel there on AI, because everybody's talking about AI, but I think it's interesting conversations. The great thing to do, I think, at this point in talking about AI is just get more use cases, just have people come and say, this is how we use it. This is how it's helping our business. And the panel that I'm doing is called Navigating Retail in the AI Era. And so I have a grocer and then someone who's worked a lot with consumer products companies using AI and being able to personalize what they're doing to get to customers. And so we'll be talking about things like how you can personalize data, what are the ethics of personalizing that data, and how AI is just going to change the whole supply chain. So it should be really interesting. And then the next big conference that IFPA has is the Washington Conference, and it's June 10th through the 12th in Washington. And it's one of the premier events that unites all the different segments of fresh produce and really looking to address the pressing public policy problems. And they do visits on the Hill, and it's a really great conference too. Some people say, well, I don't work on those issues, so, you know, I don't need to go, but like everybody works on these issues. You know, we're talking about labor and water and access, and, you know, it's issues that everybody works on. So those are the two biggest ones. And then our big conference is being held in Atlanta this year. And that's our Global Produce and Flower Show. And we have usually between 20 and 23,000 people that come from all over the world that come to that show.
Wonderful. And that's in October this year in Atlanta?
Yeah. Yeah.
Great. Okay. And so you touched on a couple things here that I want to dig a little bit deeper into. And, you know, during one of our last podcast episodes, we spoke with Joyce Hunter on that relationship between industry and government and how important that conversation is. So speaking to that Washington conference, that's that in action, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Is there any other advice you have for those who want to increase that conversation between industry and government, understand it better, understand how they may qualify for grants and even lobbying for issues that are important to the industry?
Yeah, we're very active. We have a whole government relations team that lives in Washington, and they're very involved with what's going on from a policy point of view. And so I would suggest anyone who's interested to get in touch with one of them if you have something that you're really fighting for and want to know more about. We have newsletters on it. We do Hill visits. You know, there's a lot of work that's being done, and that group really keeps, you know, it's a whole, I'm sure you've spent time there, and it's like a whole language, you know, like you have to be in it or it's hard to follow. And so the group that we have there is, they all have long histories of working in government and really understand it. And we're also expanding that all over the world. You know, we're strongest in the US because we're based here and have a whole team, but you know, there's a lot of other issues that are global, and being a global organization, you know, a lot of issues around trade and a lot of issues around what's a GMO and a lot of issues around what kind of crop protection products and like all of, oh, and packaging. Packaging is a huge issue right now for the produce industry because lots of people are passing laws that you can't use plastic. And that's a huge problem to our industry. You know, we need to find some good solutions. And so those are some of the areas that we look at.
Yeah. And so I'm circling back a little bit to when you were talking about Climate Smart being a focus of IFPA this year and specifically your podcast. But let's dig into that a little bit more and talk about, first of all, the impact it's had on the industry as a whole and some of the major challenges we're seeing. What are you seeing on the fresh produce side? Obviously, we know the big ones, the droughts and the floods and the extreme weather. But what are you focusing on specifically right now at IFPA in terms of climate change and how it's impacting the industry?
Yeah, I think you know, like you said, it's the erratic climate events, you know, so that's really changing. It's so unpredictable. And so people trying to figure out, you know, is it flooding? Is it drought? And I was talking to somebody that was out in the strawberry field yesterday down in Southern California, and he said, you know, they had hail, like they've never had hail. And so those strawberries that were berries at the top of the plant right now, that's gone. Like they, you know, they're not gonna be able to sell those. And other parts are still too wet, which is weird for this time of year for Southern California to have wet fields that you can't even get into. So, you know, it's just really changing. And then we're having a lot of issues around, you know, there's certain crops that need a particular number of chilling hours, you know, especially trees. And if you don't have those chilling hours, you don't produce fruit. And so we need to have some solutions to that. You know, we need to, a lot of crops are going to go different directions, further north, further south. And again, being a global organization, really looking at, you know, where are we going to be able to produce the food?
Right.
So I think that those are some really big issues. I think another issue that, you know, you and I have talked a lot about is, you know, how can we solve some of this by going indoors? You know, as climate continues to change, there's places where it's going to make sense to grow things indoors to be, you know, close to the supply chain and consumers. So, you know, it's funny when we, or in the early days when we were trying to define CEA, we were, you know, people would always say offhand, well, not hoop houses. And so it was like, is it vertical? Is it greenhouse? You know, and it was a throwaway line. People would say not hoop houses. But I was talking to someone who is developing super sophisticated hoop houses. And so, so you just kind of have more or less tunnels. But when you look, you know, another thing with climate change is just the sun is more intense. Yeah. And so it really is protected agriculture. And so some of these, you know, especially fruits and vegetables, that they can't handle that extreme sunlight. And so you may just need to put up a tunnel, you know, that can, you know, open and close itself so that you don't burn everything because we're getting, you know, higher amounts of sunlight. So there's, you know, there's a lot of different technologies in the way that we use that. We're just seeing a lot of these different things coming up, and how can technology really help us solve these?
Yeah. And so that's the next question there. So when you're looking at technology and the role it can play in some of these solutions, where are we right now with our understanding of that? And how are we approaching technology as we look into the next several years? Because it doesn't seem like this climate's going to regulate anytime soon.
Yeah, I think, you know, wrapping in technology to use technology is a little meta here, but one of the things that I'm really excited about is the use of AI to help in prediction. So I think really using AI, especially generative AI, to look at some of these climate models and be able, you know, we know enough we can't predict every weather event, but, you know, soon we probably can, because you're going to be able to understand all the different forces. And so using AI to be able to predict, you know, should we plant here? How long is it going to take to get to market? And then that kind of helps you know what solutions you need. And so if there's going to be a certain weather event that's going to bring in a certain insect, well, then we need to have products that take care of that insect, and it may be a new insect on that plant. And so there's a lot of exciting technologies in crop protection that will just help us grow better with a changing climate. Breeding, you know, looking at using things like gene editing and being able to breed differently for some of those climate variations. And so maybe you don't need as many chilling hours, or maybe you can, the crop can be okay if it's hotter or more drought. And so you, I think breeding, and especially with things like gene editing, where we can do generations so much faster. So that's going to be a huge solution.
We talked a little bit about predictive AI or generative AI and predictive technology on the climate side. How else is AI playing a role in bringing fresh produce to consumers from start to finish?
Yeah, I think one of the companies that is doing a lot with AI, and I love, they talk about this publicly, so it's no, you know, secret knowledge that I have, but Driscoll's is doing a ton of work because they're such a huge integrated company. And so they can really look at, okay, we're growing this berry in this region of the world. When is it going to get on the shelf at Walmart at its peak? And so they're using a lot of generative AI just within their own company, which makes the whole data management and control thing really great, you know, because they own it. They own the whole thing. But I, for them, they're really trying to look at a lot of different things to try to figure out, you know, how do we run our whole company, that the supply chain is running well so that the best berry gets on the shelf.
Absolutely. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how these evolve over the next few years in response to these extreme weather conditions. And then hand in hand with what we're talking about right now is the labor issue that has been an ongoing thing for as long as agriculture has existed, right? However, you know, there's new tech solutions coming on board all the time. So you want to talk a little bit about where we are in terms of the technology that help with the labor challenges that we face?
So it's a huge, any kind of automation or any kind of robotics is a huge challenge. And now we're, you know, a decade into it, so things are a little less surprising. But when we first started to put robots out in the field, they're used to being like on factory floors, like in, you know, car manufacturers, and you put out in the field and it's like 100 degrees, or it's freezing, or it's muddy, or it's snowing and wet, or, you know, or it's bumpy. And so there was a huge learning curve to figure out, like, how do we really use robots in the field? And then the other challenge is just the tensile strength of, how do you imagine, you know, programming a robot to pick a strawberry without crushing it? So there's very different issues. And how do you know which strawberry to pick, because you don't pick them all at once and you just want the reddest ones? And so there's this confluence of all these technologies coming together that, and we're getting better, but it's still very early days. And so one of the things that I see that I'm excited about is just some of the, like, harvest assist and the smaller robots that I've talked to several companies that just say it's, you know, we're reinventing the wheelbarrow, and we haven't done this in like 500 years. And so just having little robots running up and down the rows that, you know, you can put picked fruit on and it carries it. So that just the fact of not having workers carry the fruit to the end of the row, you know, they just pick and put it on there and they don't have to walk back and forth. And just all those little things, you know, carrying trays of transplants and all those little things that can be done by harvest assist type robots. So I see those getting adopted first. And there's three or four companies that are doing that. Burrow was one of the first, but there's some others coming behind them that are specialized in different things. And then the next thing that is coming along is weeding. And so weeding and thinning is fairly easy to do if you use computer vision, and then the robot can see the weed and either put a very small amount of pesticide on it, or there's a couple companies that have lasers and that just, you know, you'd go behind the robot and you see little fires everywhere, you know, where the lasers hit, you know. And so that's another, that those are in the field and still having a few issues, but coming along. And then the next are, you know, things like pruning and picking and things like that. And that those are kind of the harder ones, but those are coming along too. But there's things like with romaine, with lettuce, they still, you know, they used to have to go behind the harvester with the big knives and cut the romaine and then lift it up. And now they have machines that cut the head. And so there's still tons of people in the field, but all they're doing is getting it up on, you know, onto to load them into boxes. And so you don't have people with knives. So that's a much more safety issue. And you don't have people that are bent over all day. And so right. There's just, you know, there's steps to take, but we're I think people get impatient and say, this isn't working. And, you know, we don't have it all solved yet, but, you know, we will.
Yeah, it's an iterative process, right? We learn and we change. So with IFPA as a global organization and the purview that you have, where do you see different regions in terms of the tech adoption for labor saving technologies?
Well, one of the interesting things is just these companies are trying to figure out a business model. And so a lot of these robots, two things. One, they're super expensive right now because we haven't built enough of them to get the cost down. And two, they're just changing and improving. It's like electric cars. They're changing and improving them so fast that you don't want to spend, you know, whatever it costs $1 million and then it's already obsolete because the next generation. And so a lot of what the companies are doing for business models is doing a service model. And so they'll say, you know, we'll come out and we'll bring our tractors and we'll weed your fields. And so most of these companies are in the US now. And so that's where they are and that's where they're developing. And so there's more in the US, there's more adoption just because that's where people are. Canada has a number of companies. They have less potential customers, you know, than we do. So, but there are companies in Canada. South America, a lot of our growers here in the US also grow in Mexico and South America. And so, but again, it's pretty early stage technology. So if you build it here and then transporting it, and then it's, you know, things are changing so fast. And so I would say for that particular technology, it needs to get more momentum and work better in the US before I think there's certainly interest in adoption in other parts of the world. But I think certainly like Australia and New Zealand have adopted more because they've got people making things there. But yeah, it's just an early stage technology that's going to take a while to, you know, get improved enough to really ship them all over the world.
Got it. Okay. And then, you know, same question in terms of the climate smart technologies that we're seeing now. When you're looking at sort of that climate smart tech, do you see any patterns emerging in terms of regions of the world that are adopting more so than others?
It's not just the growers adopting the technology, is the whole ecosystem there to support that adoption? So do you have distributors that know how to sell the technology? Do you have the companies and like tech providers or consultants that know how to help people use the technology? And so again, if they're technologies that are born in the US, you know, they're going to do more of that here and then move out into other countries. The Israeli companies, I think, are really fascinating because they've got great universities in Israel. They've got fabulous ecosystem of developing ag tech, and they have a very small market. So what I love about working with Israeli companies is they know from the day they start their company that they have to be global and that they have to figure out how to go into South America and North America and Europe. Like they have to start with those types of business plans because there's not a big enough market to sustain a company in Israel. And so working with them is really fun because they really come at it with, you know, how are we going to do this everywhere? Whereas I think as American companies, we're kind of like, oh, well, maybe the US is big enough, you know, but Israeli companies like, no, we have to go elsewhere. So I think it's, you know, the whole ecosystem has to be there to support the adoption of technology.
Yeah, that full ecosystem is important. So part of what IFPA works on is an accelerator program, right? And you're in the process right now of selecting companies for that. Do you want to talk a little bit about what the accelerator is and how you work with industry?
Great. Yeah, so we're in our third year of running the accelerator, and the program lasts for 6 months, and it's really more of an immersion program, but so we don't take any equity, we don't give any money, there's no pitch days, but the purpose of the accelerator is to bring new technologies into the produce industry. So our purpose isn't to create and develop big companies or even have companies necessarily be successful. Our purpose is to get new technology on the farm that's vetted through us for our members. So so slightly different focus than, you know, a lot of other accelerators have. We take everyone on the accelerator for a week trip in California to see all different parts of the industry. So they really learn if they're not from the industry. They get a mentor that's a really high level mentor. We're having a demo day in Salinas where they get to pitch to customers, not to VCs, but they pitch to customers. And then they have a booth at our global show where they get to be in front of 20,000 people in the produce industry. So that's the program. And right now, as you said, we're today selecting the companies. There's 12 companies. And we look at things that, like, you know, what is the technology? Does the technology work? Is it going to solve a big, important problem? We are focused on climate smart solutions. That's the focus of the program. So they have to fit into working in the produce industry and be climate smart. But almost any company is climate smart. If they make you grow better, you know, that's, you're using less resources and you're growing better. So, so we look at a portfolio of technologies. We like to bring people in from other countries. We're trying to bring technology in from other industries, from other agricultural segments. And then, you know, we just throw them all together and they work really well together and learn from each other. And it's a really great program. It's just a way to expose other industries to us and bring in some fresh new ideas.
That's wonderful. So if somebody wants to learn more about International Fresh Produce Association or Bonnie Estes, where can they find you?
Website, freshproduce.com is the exact URL. And the best way to get to me is through LinkedIn. I'm super active on LinkedIn. And the best way is send me a message and give me your email and we shift the conversation over to email so things don't get lost. But yeah, that's a good way to get me.
Wonderful. So we'll find you on freshproduce.com and LinkedIn for both IFPA and Bonnie. Bonnie, thank you so much for taking the time today to speak with us and share a little bit about what IFPA is doing in the tech space, the ultra important work that you're doing. We appreciate you so much.
Thank you. It was great to talk to you.
All right. And thanks for tuning in to the Groundbreaking Podcast. We'll see you next month. Thank you for listening to today's episode of Groundbreaking Podcast from the Global Ag Tech Initiative. You can subscribe to our podcast at globalagtechinitiative.com by clicking on the podcast tab in the menu, or by subscribing to our channel on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe to the Global Ag Tech Initiative's weekly e-newsletter, The Signal, for all things ag tech. Visit globalagtechinitiative.com and click on the Signal Subscribe button on the right-hand side of the home page. Of course, you can also find us on LinkedIn. Just search for Global Ag Tech Initiative. To get even more in tune with the global ag tech space and be active in its advancement, consider joining the Global Ag Tech Alliance. More information on how to join the alliance is available on globalagtechinitiative.com. The Global Ag Tech Initiative and the Groundbreaking Podcast are produced by Meister Media Worldwide. I'm Heather Tunstall, co-chair for the Global Ag Tech Initiative. Thank you for joining us today.